The following is a presentation of the Cold Slither Podcast Network. The Cold Slither, you'll be joining us
soon. Good evening, Rick. Would you believe it's Dr. Doom?
What's on your evil mind?
Oh, you insulting tongue, it mocked my words well.
How about this rumor that you are really hired, Mr. Stark?
And welcome to another exciting episode of the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles. I am your host, Tim D-O-double-G. Yay! And tonight I'm joined by the man behind the sound effects, at Agent_70 on Twitter.
What's up, everybody?
And we also have back with us tonight, at PCN_Dirt.
Yay!
Now you perform. Like you threw it out there like, oh, his long awaited return, so now I gotta come up with something big for this show.
That's the best you could do.
That was it. Where's the gong? No, you need a gong.
Oh, you want a gong? That fine. Yeah.
There we go. That's
I was
what
giving
it
you
was.
The drum roll just to give you like the couple seconds to come up with something good.
No, I got nothing.
So go to his website, popculturenetwork.com, and also go to our overall network or website, theclicknation.com. You can find all the ways to follow us on social media, subscribe to the newsletter, and while you're at it, also check out cspn.us, the Cult Slither Podcasting Network, and listen to all the various podcasts you can find on there. And we normally would start with the news section of the show, but since PCN Dirt has to get going in the morning to C2E2 in Chicago for the weekend, we will start with the comic book reviews of the week, and then we'll let him get on his way so he can get some rest, and Agent 70 and myself will finish up with the news.
Before we get started here, here's 6 years worth of press passes for C2E2 every year since 2010 was the first time. It was the first one they did, first time I went with press pass. And then here's this year's. So 7 years of going as press to C2E2. That's got to happen. I've got nothing good to show for it. Nothing good to show for it.
Except
But yeah, I'm getting up. Well, let's see. I guess I'm getting up at like 3 in the morning, and then we're leaving at 4 for a 3.5-hour drive to get through the morning rush hour traffic in Chicago to get up for the retailer breakfast before the show actually starts, and then all the good stuff for the show. So,
anything you want to let the viewers and listeners at home know what you have planned for the weekend as a part of the press?
Oh, as part of press? I was going to say the one thing I got planned for the weekend is getting drunk tomorrow night, but meet up with the guys from nerdcity.com and get wasted. But as far as press goes,
interviews or meeting with creators or other owners?
I talk to a lot of the guys on Facebook, and they're all pretty much just, you know, they've got tables in Artist Alley and booths set up, and a lot of them, because they run it themselves, you know, DC and Marvel don't have booths there anymore. Marvel sometimes has something, you know, set up and they'll have creators come by, but but for the most part, the big publishers just don't have a large presence at the shows anymore. They tend to save them more for other...
San Diego, New York.
Yeah, those much bigger ones. So most of the guys, they just say, you know, I've got a table at Artist Alley, come meet me. I can't really leave the table, you know. But just about everybody I've talked to is more than willing to sit and do a little interview. So, you know, we've been going through our stuff. I usually take a couple camcorders and we record, you know, the video that way. But nowadays, I think my phone just gets better quality, you know, better sound and better video than my, you know, video camera that I bought a couple years ago. So I think we're just going to start recording everything on phones and just, you know, put together a little medley video afterwards with, you know, a couple minutes with each person that we sit down and talk to. But it's just a lot of guys saying, hey, just stop by the booth and we'll sit and talk for a few minutes. And so we're going to see who's there and who's available, and as long as they're not too crowded, we'll be able to sit and talk to them.
You're going to have plenty of portable batteries with you, huh?
Yeah, well, I was actually thinking about that. We may make a stop at like a Radio Shack or something on the way, but yeah, because it used to be, you know, DC would have like a press room that you would go to, and they would have like Scott Snyder, and he'd just be sitting there all day, you know, and everybody would get 15-20 minutes to sit and talk to him, and he's just there for a couple hours. They don't do that anymore. because I think there's too many places like comicbook.com and comic book resources and Comic Vine and all those places that set up their own booths, and the creators go and do video interviews there for their demo reels and, you know, all of that stuff that goes on. IGN.com usually is there, you know, doing videos of stuff. So they really just don't do the press stuff like they used to. I mean, really, the only thing with the badge is when you, if you have that press badge, you go to talk to somebody, they take you a little more seriously than just some random, you know, fan coming up to talk to them. But a lot of the, you know, perks, so to speak, of being in press and getting access to things, they just really don't have that much stuff anymore because comic book sites are now, you know,
ubiquitous.
Yeah, you swing a dead cat and you hit five of them. So, you know, it's not like it used to be, but we'll see how it goes.
All right, well, hopefully you get some cool interviews or, you know, at least a couple of, you know, quick shots of cool things.
Yeah, well, and there are some books I'm looking for, you know, some actual paper comics that I'm hoping to pick up. So that's actually part of the trip, too, is trying to dig out some of these issues I'm looking for.
Nice. So you've got a want list. You're going in there. That is so old school, Dirt. You get applause for that, man.
Like Red Wolf from Nathan Edmondson. They sent us, you know, review copies, the PDFs, and I read them, and I waited, you know, I wasn't really sure if I was going to like it, whatever. So about the time issue 3 came out, I read it, realized I liked it. I tried to go back and buy them. Issue 1 is sold out. You can't order it from Diamond anymore. None of the stores around me have it. I was able to get 2, 3, and 4, but I got to find a 1, and it's not a, you know, a real book that's burning up the charts or anything like that. So
it's just harder to find.
I'm going to have to dig in some of those booths, because they'll have, you know, Saga. They'll have like 20 copies, you know, sitting on the table that they're trying to pawn off on people, but it's going to be harder to find a book like that. So that's one I'm going to dig around for.
I was about to say, if you're still looking, let me know, because I think my little shop, Carmine Street Comics, shout out to Carmine Street Comics, might have a copy of at least the hip-hop cover.
Well, and like I could order it off eBay or Amazon or something like that, but I just like picking it up and bringing it with me and not sitting staring at the mailbox for a week.
Absolutely. You know? I agree. So. Believe me, you know I agree. So that's pretty
anyway, cool. Anyway, all right, so we're going to do reviews then? We're jumping right
there? Yes, any book that we want to start with first?
Let me just quickly, Superman Wonder Woman 27 and Superman 50
go together
because they're the ongoing story. And this is the same thing that happened last month with Superman Wonder Woman and Superman with 26 and 49, is that you have to read one, it leads right into the other. And Superman Wonder Woman, again, is the book that nothing really happens. Mm-hmm. There's a little bit of fighting. It just kind of sets up for what's happening in Superman 50.
Right, the finale is.
For the finale. But the story itself is really, there's not a whole lot to it. It's just kind of wasting time.
Yeah, it's a bunch of action sequences. That's all it is.
Yeah, and the artwork, honestly, in Superman Wonder Woman 27 isn't the greatest.
I agree.
It looked very stiff. It looked like they used something like Poser in Photoshop in order to lay out the people and then kind of doodled on top of it to, you know, make it look like the characters. But the,
yeah, not so much for backgrounds, huh?
Yeah, and I don't know, just it didn't really do much for me. But Superman 50, it was odd because it's the end of this crossover they've been doing with Vandal Savage in all the Superman books. And for the big finale, it's really more of just a character piece on who Superman is.
Yeah, it was anticlimactic for me.
Yeah, I understand that there's really, as far as the story goes, there's a comet. Vandal Savage is trying to get the comet to crash on Earth. Everybody with his bloodline is going to get powers like Vandal Savage.
And he'll be even more powerful, right?
Right. So, you know, he's got to stop this from hitting Earth and you know, being attacked by all these superpowered people and whatever. But for being that finale and leading up everything that's been leading up to this, because they've actually been planting the seeds for this for months and months and months.
Yes. All those villains, it turns
that
out.
We don't understand, you know, for the longest time. Like, who is this guy and why is he the
Order of Root and Fuhrer, whatever the black muck person was. I forgot who that was. But yeah, they were all descendants of Vandal Savage. We didn't know that.
And for building up for this storyline, basically all it comes down to is they spend like almost 2/3 of the issue, I think it was, just like doing a Christmas Carol with Superman, showing, you know, the past that could have been, the present that could be, and the future that might be.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I didn't pick up on, I knew that's what was happening. I didn't pick up on the reference. That's exactly what this is. It's Dickensian. It's a Christmas Carol.
So it's, as a concept, I think it's fine. As a finale to this storyline that's been threaded and became this big crossover for the last 3 months, it doesn't really do the job. If this had been just a random issue, you know, issue 42 of Superman, here's what could be and might be and whatever, then it's like, okay, you know, I could see it. That'd be a fun story to tell. But as the climax of this
long running, yeah.
Yeah, it just didn't, it felt like it fizzled out there at the end.
That was about what I was going to say. Didn't this feel like an annual story? Like this was like an, you know, like kind of like one of those things where it's supposed to remind you what Superman is about and what kind of character he possesses. It's almost like it takes a shot. It almost takes a shot at whatchamacallit, Kevin Costner in the Man of Steel movie. You know, you know, there's a couple of like kind of small digs at how, you know, the character of
always having to hide yourself. And...
Exactly. So. What, you know, I wholeheartedly agree with your take on this, with your assessment, because I found myself just getting bored while we were going through the Christmas past, the Christmas present, the Christmas future versions of what Vandal Savage imagines Earth to be and Superman's reality to be, if they would just embrace the seductive power that Vandal Savage is always pursuing and wants to embrace. And, you know, that's, you know, the crux of this is, you know, Superman has basically made himself subservient to the weak because he's always protecting them using his power. And Savage is telling him, well, you should just rise above them and be powerful and move forward with that. And basically a lot of the Christmas past, present, and future involve variations on what happens if he either asserts his power or fails to use it. So
it's funny that you mention that it sounds like an annual, mm-hmm. That it feels like an annual, because this is not the original story that was supposed to be in Superman 50. The original story that was solicited was Superman meeting the
90 Superman.
Pre-Zero Hour version? I don't know what which reality it is.
Pre-New 52, maybe?
Well, it's definitely pre-New 52, but I think it even goes back farther than that. But anyway, the solicit was that the Superman from Superman, Lois and Clark,
right,
and this Superman were going to meet for the first time, and then that's been pushed to another storyline that's going to be coming, where they're going to do the whole thing with his son becoming Superboy, and then the Superman and Supergirl, and I don't know if the Superboy that's been in Teen Titans is going to appear, and you know, all of these Supermen are going to come out as part of Rebirth, and so that story of them meeting got pushed aside. So I wonder if this is a script, if they were thinking of doing an annual. And they just pulled it from the annual and made it this oversized issue number 50. I hadn't thought about that, but it kind of makes sense that they might do something like that.
Hmm. I mean, I think... Well, go ahead.
I was going to make a quick note about when PC and Dirt was describing the descendants of Vandal Savage taking on Superman and all the various heroes. It reminded me of the Terrigen Mist exploding over Earth and like all the descendants of the Inhumans rising to power with Savage and his offspring, because are they all considered his children, or do they just have his bloodline?
No, they're all considered his children. Yeah, yeah, he calls them all his children.
Yeah, that's what I remember reading.
Okay, so it's slightly different then.
Because they all call him father, and they're all trying to show off that they can beat up Superman in order to be good enough to be part of his team. So,
gotcha.
So yeah. But yeah, I haven't read the Inhuman stuff, but I'll be reading them probably tomorrow while I'm sitting in the car. So. But yeah, so again, Superman, Wonder Woman, 27, you can completely skip it as part of the storyline. And then 50, I mean, if you really want it to be a purist of your collection, but for the most part, it's not a super important issue.
Yeah, very anticlimactic, as I said at the beginning.
All right.
Hey, Dirt, how about we talk about Web Warriors, which was really good.
I didn't pull up covers. I just realized I didn't pull up the covers. Oh.
Talked about two issues just now and didn't show.
Yeah, exactly.
Didn't show a single cover.
That's because we got right into the discussion.
Actually, I want to talk real quick before we get into
Web Warriors.
I want to say something. This is the cover of Superman. All these books, the Batman and Superman books this month, they have a special variant that's in these polybags. Mm-hmm. And the polybags, if it's a Batman book, it's a picture of Superman with the bat symbol ripped out and the logo behind it. If it's a Superman book, then it's a picture of Batman with the Superman symbol ripped out. And in these bags, there are three different versions of a variant cover. It could be a black and white version, like penciled. It could be inked. It could be half inked. It could be half colored. It could be just the characters are colored. It could be a full color. And then I think they haven't announced this, but I'm pretty sure that hidden within, like one out of every 10,000 copies or something weird like that, is a blank one that has a piece of artwork drawn on it. That's what they've done before with these polybagged ones. But I just really love the artwork, the design on these bags. I've actually started collecting these bags. I've been snipping the comics out very carefully and saving the bags. I want to display these because that, as a piece of pop art, just looks really cool. Like, I just love how it's ripped out across the eyes like that. That is just a really neat thing that they're doing on all those books, and I really appreciate that design work that's gone into it. But that's all I wanted to say about it.
Okay.
All right. So Web Warriors.
Yes.
Go ahead, talk about Web Warriors.
I was just going to say that we all know, we've talked about this book before, that this is a book that you can read with your son.
Yes.
And or daughter. But I'm specifically in Durant's case. But I love this book because it's just got a great spirit to it. It's just a lot of fun. And this issue, contrary to or basically opposite to the effect that the climax of the Vandal Savage story in Superman, the climax to this Web Warriors versus the many faces of Electro across the multiverse, I thought the climax was done really well. There was a lot of suspense to it. There was some heroic sacrifice. There was some, you know, massive character development for some of these characters, and it just seemed to me like a ton of fun. This is the ending that Vandal Savage, that the Savage Dawn story wanted, and it never paid off.
And I was gonna say, one of the characters that appears to be sacrificed in this issue is one of the characters that I had assumed would be safe, because it's a character that has previous history in the Marvel Universe.
Spoiler alert.
Well, I'm not going to say who it is.
Okay. I won't. I was thinking you would say it. And I
wasn't. No. I don't want to spoil it. Because, I mean, there are four characters, I think, that have prior history that people are familiar enough with.
Right.
But one of the there are actually two. I'll spoil it and say there's two that appear not to make it. And one of them is a character that has some history. So I'm actually kind of surprised that was one of the ones to go.
Right.
But I do like that it appears that a Doc Ock is now part of the Web Warriors team.
Mm-hmm. That's a great twist.
Yeah, she's a fun character. I like seeing her on there. But yeah, I mean, overall, this is it's one of those series where it's not written for kids. Like, it's not, you talk about kids comics and, they do make specifically for kids. You can get like My Little Pony comics and you can get Sonic the Hedgehog comics. You know, those are made for children. Right. Web Warriors is not a book that's written for children. It's actually rated T+ because there's a fair amount of violence and fighting and people getting, punched in the face and all that kind of stuff. But I mean, really, it is written at such a level of pure storytelling that it doesn't rely on any gimmicks of, throwing in foul language or having to throw in some gore or having to throw in, sexuality between the characters. Like, none of that stuff is there because the storytelling is so good. It doesn't need to do any of that stuff in order to, try to draw attention or cause controversy or anything. It's just a purely written, well-done superhero comic, and because of the way it is, it makes it a one that you can read, with your kids. Because again, I mean, it's the violence that's in here is really, Looney Tunes.
Sure.
Style violence, so there's nothing, even though it just boggles my mind that it's rated T+, because it really, I'd do it like an E10 or something.
Mm-hmm.
But it is a really just perfect, like this is my favorite, I think, of all the Spider-Man books. Like, this is a consistently good Spider-Man book. I just enjoy everything, even the artwork in this book.
Right.
And I love the creativity and the ability to play with all these different characters and different dimensions and different ideas behind who these people are. It's just one of the most enjoyable books out there.
Right. I mean, listen, shout out to Mike Costa, the writer, and David Baldi on the penciler on this. They're consistently putting together one of the best reads of the of every month, and I love that when it comes out and I look at the books that Dirt read, I see it there also. I see it on your list, and I'm like, yeah, I can talk about this with Dirt this week. That's a great thing. Just getting back to something you mentioned earlier about the Spider-Man corner of the Marvel U right now. you know, listen, I if I want to see, you know, kind of grown-up Peter Parker that's still making mistakes but, you know, doing the best that they can, I read Amazing. If I want to read about Miles, you know, I read Spider-Man. But if I want to read just, like, pure, honest-to-goodness superhero team-up, you know, stuff, this is like Spidey team-up, but it's a bunch of Spideys teaming up. And it's just so much fun that, you know, this is, you know, if I'm looking for that, you know, a little bit more traditional superhero fare, this is the book I turn to. And it's just, it's so well executed, like you were saying earlier, so fun. And that's always a word that comes out first when I talk about this book. It's so much fun. And that's why I love it.
It feels like the great lost Saturday morning cartoon of our youth. Like this would have been perfect on the, you know, CBS morning lineup, you know, between Pole Position and Advanced Dungeons and Dragons. You know, this would be a great cartoon in there, just the way the storytelling is done.
I agree.
Yeah, so this has quickly become one of my favorites in the Marvel Universe.
Sure. And you know what? All it takes is, if I wanted to hand this book to someone, I would explain the premise as this. Look, this, you know, the Marvel Universe is a multiverse unto itself. There are various versions of Spider-Man. In this book, a bunch of those versions team up, and hijinks ensue. That's all you need to know. And you go forward from there. It's a pretty simple premise. As long as you get that part down, you can have a lot of fun reading this.
Yeah, and it's also one that's not, I think because it has all the different universes and everything, it's not tied deeply into any Marvel continuity.
Right.
So, someone goes, well, I want to read something, but I didn't, like, I kind of read Secret Wars, but I don't really know anything else. Then it's like, okay, well, do you like Spider-Man? Here, read this one.
Yeah.
You know, because you don't have to know what happened in the last 5 years of Amazing Spider-Man in order to follow this book, like so many of the others. That are going on right now. You know, people look at the X-Men books and they're like, well, wait, what's this X-Men team? And I have to look at them and go, I don't even know. Mm-hmm. I don't know who these people are. I have no idea, you know. but this, you know, it doesn't matter in this. Mm-hmm. You know, you get the idea that they're all from these different worlds, and you don't know the complete history of them, but you know enough to know that they're Spider-Man, and whatever you know about Spider-Man is enough to be able to follow it.
Right. Absolutely. All right, cool. All right, let's see. What else do we have here? Tim, what's on your list?
Did you guys read International Iron Man?
I did.
Let me quickly say, I was flipping through Web Warriors while you two were discussing it just now, and I think I'll give this issue a read at some point this weekend. You guys have been hyping it up for so long, and I enjoyed David Baldion on Nova, the previous volume of Nova. So I will be checking this out. I'm in the last page, and I see, I guess, something happened to two characters, so
mm-hmm.
I need to see what that's all about. But yes, let's get to International Iron Man, because I got some gripes.
International Iron Man.
I liked it a lot. It was so good.
It wasn't an Iron Man story. I don't know who this kid was in this flashback tale.
Well, it's Tony Stark. But real quick, before we move on, I just wanted to... this is the lone hip-hop cover that came out this week. This is the International Iron Man hip-hop cover. I honestly, I'm not 100% sure if I remember which album cover this is. I'm probably going to have to Google it. But it's that's the one that's out this week.
So it's basically a flashback story to Tony in college somewhere. I forget. Was it another country? Yeah,
in England.
England, yeah.
He meets a girl that comes from money. They go on a date with her parents. Hydra shows up and, I guess, kills a bunch of people, including
Hydra.
Parents, at least her father. That's where the arc kind of got mucky for me. I couldn't tell who was getting shot and what was going on.
Yeah.
And then we find out that the same girl he was trying to date is the villain in the present that he's just got finished fighting and apparently lost to. But I finished it, I was just like, what the hell is this?
See, I liked it. And one of the things that I liked about it was that, you know, it opens with him losing that battle, and then it goes into the flashback, and I forgot about that scene at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
So when you get to the end and it wraps it and it, you know, pulls everything back around, suddenly I remembered that scene at the beginning. Oh, and then it all ties back together, and I thought that was a good use of the storytelling. But I also like the fact that they modernized his history.
Yeah, they definitely did.
So he's no longer, like, his...
He's no longer Vietnam War... I mean, not that he has been for quite a while, I don't think.
Yeah, but it's one of those things in the Marvel Universe, is that rubber band history that they talk about, where it always snaps forward a little bit, and they snapped it forward again with him here to bring him into the more modern era. But I enjoyed, you know, the... who he was in college was exactly who you expect him to be. I mean, that's who you know him to be. And I enjoyed the story, the smarmy dialogue, the quick wit that he has. Like, you can see all of those characteristics of him, but yet he's still young and not so sure of himself like he is so much nowadays. And he's a little more vulnerable at this age than what we normally see. So I enjoyed that, but I also enjoyed the way the storytelling was done, where it snapped it back around. Like, I can understand the artwork when it's nighttime and you have a bunch of these characters you're not exactly familiar with, and you're not sure which ones are the guards and which one's the dad and who's getting shot, you know,
right.
and a bunch of Hydra guys who are all dressed the same, so they all come jumping out at things, and it's kind of hard to follow which one, mm-hmm. where did that guy come from, and, you know, that kind of stuff. But I'm looking forward to it. I enjoyed the introduction to the series, and I'm looking forward to see where it goes.
I'm sort of in between both of your assessments of this. I tend towards the positive, though, because I like the twist in the storytelling, where we start out with this Iron Man scene that leads to a flashback, and it's the flashback that's jarring, but at the same time is necessary to help set up, you know, the climax of that opening scene, which is the reintroduction of this character from Tony Stark's past. And what I'm starting to understand, maybe I missed this in the solicits or in some of the announcements surrounding the start of a second Iron Man series. This is apparently the book where Bendis is going to explore the mystery of Tony Stark's parentage. So,
yes.
You know, it's good that that's not going to complicate what's going on in the Invincible Iron Man book.
Mm.
But at the same time, I don't know if that's enough of a draw for me to pick this book up going forward.
Well, I like the Iron Man character enough and Tony Stark enough that I'm more interested in reading this than a bunch of the other Marvel titles that are going on right now with some of the other characters.
Okay.
This is one of the few Marvel comics on the stand with the key character who is the same key character. You know, there's a different Cap, there's a different Thor, there's
right.
a couple different Spider-Men. I mean, and I like Miles. I mean, don't get me wrong, I read that mm-hmm. one too, I enjoy it, but this is, you know, there's a different Thor, there's a different, you know, everybody right. is a different version nowadays, except it seems, you know, there's a different Hulk.
It's
like
true.
I keep thinking about this, and I keep thinking of more examples of where it's a different person, and this is
right. Well, there's a Miss. Yeah, I was about to say Miss Marvel's not Miss Marvel anymore, but right. Captain Marvel's still Captain Marvel.
But still, it's one of those key characters. And again, this is another one that you know, my son and I both read because he also likes Iron Man from the movies and cartoons and whatnot.
Right.
And so with this being the character, like, he kind of wanted to read Hulk, and then he read that first one, and he had no idea who Amadeus was, and he had no interest in following it afterwards because it's not the character that he knows. And it's Amadeus has his own history and his own storyline with Hulk that if you don't follow that, then you have no idea what the foundation of the story is. Whereas this, Iron Man, Tony Stark, got it. You know, let's move on. And so I enjoy it enough because of the character that I don't have to think about, okay, wait, what happened in the last 5 years? You know, like, what, wait, you know, who bankrolled this, and when did this happen, and whatever. It's just, okay, Tony Stark, Iron Man, go. And that's all there is to it.
That I can appreciate. I'm still not sold on this being added to my, you know, physical pull list, though. That's where that comes from.
All right. Other Marvel books.
Spider-Woman number 5.
Yo, Dirt, did you read this?
No, I have not been reading the series.
Well, you don't need to have read any of the previous issues, because all you need to have known was what was on the covers to know how we got from issue 1 to issue 5. And issue 5 is huge. You know, this is a surprise candidate for Click of the Week for me, because I had such a ball reading this. You know, Dennis Hopeless and Javier Rodriguez do such a phenomenal job of telling, like, a, I don't want to say it's a grown-up story, but it's a very down-to-earth tale of a single mother superhero. And there's a lot of different issues that are, you know, touched on in this that, you know, that relate to the real world, especially, you know, her wanting to get back into superheroing, but still having this little baby at home, and some of the conflicts that she has, you know, internally about that. And, you know, how that relates to, you know, first responders who basically put themselves at risk for other people, but still have, you know, family and children at home that they need to get back to. And, you know, this book touches on all that without being, you know, without it just being a surface examination. It's actually a pretty it's actually, in my opinion, a pretty well thought out approach to it. You know, the note I left in the sheet was, it's an interesting read for any parents out there. So I think that if anyone can relate to where this book is going, it's people who are, you know, who are currently, you know, heading up families.
And as a pregnant superheroine, you can relate to what's going on in this story.
Well, listen, every mother is a superhero to me. So shout out to all mothers.
That's a cheap pop right there. That's what that is.
Mick Foley special for the wrestling fans out there.
You know, but no. In all seriousness, this is you know, this is a surprise candidate for Click of the Week for me. I was so very surprised at how effective this story was and how affected I was reading it.
Yeah, I enjoyed it as well. The art, visual storytelling by Javier Rodriguez is also something else that makes this book stand out. There's like the characters moving across panels. And there's a great opening scene of Jess struggling with the baby and like changing his diaper while holding a conversation and changing the diaper at the same time, using her toes to pick up the pacifier off the ground and shove it in his mouth to get him to be quiet. On another page with like four panels displaying the action all at the same time.
Right.
And we also find out who the father of Jessica's baby is.
Correct.
No spoilers here.
No spoilers here.
So it wrapped up the entire Jessica is pregnant in the first four issues, and then the fallout of how is she going to juggle being a new mother while trying to be a superhero all at the same time, while explaining the stressful thoughts that new mothers go through.
Mm-hmm.
So possible Click of the Week as well for me.
Yeah, I was very, very impressed.
Now let me get through one right quick. Poison Ivy, Cycle of Life and Death, number 3 from DC Comics.
Okay.
Issue 2, I wasn't too crazy about. Issue 1 was all right. Issue 3, it seems like things are starting to pick up a little more. Ivy is somewhat investigating some murders taking place at the Gotham botanical place that she's working at. And she's also developed some new science that she has created two new life forms from like sort of bioengineered plant life. I think their names are Hazel and Rose, maybe. I think are the two babies' names. And something happens later on in the issue where she kills a guy. Spoiler alert. Like, it took me by surprise at first because, you know, this is a series start, you know, her own series. But I guess I haven't looked at her as, like, a villain in so long since she's kind of straddled the line between hero and anti-hero that I kind of appreciated seeing her, you know, revert back to her more villainous ways, at least to take care of this character that's annoying her, just because it shows that, you know, she can still get down and dirty and do the things that she wants to do and doesn't have to be this goody two shoes that you expect from, you know, a character starring in their own book. And of course we see that nowadays in books like Deathstroke where villains or anti-heroes have their own ongoing series. And issue 1 had a guest appearance by one of Pamela Isley's best friends, Harley Quinn. And this issue has a guest appearance by Catwoman because she needs her help to break back into the research lab so she can try to find her work that was stolen. So great art by Clay Mann. So
I know you're a fan of Clay Mann, so
yeah, I like his work. So that's Poison Ivy, Cycle of Life and Death, number 3.
Shout out to Amy Chu, the writer.
Yes.
All right. Let's see. What else? How about Power Man and Iron Fist number 2?
Another very good issue.
I like this. This is a strong follow-up to what I thought was a pretty strong first issue. I thought this issue is better than the first one, to be perfectly honest.
This is one of the, it's only an issue 2, but this is, like, when I get it from the store, it's like, okay, first book I'm reading this week is Power Man and Iron Fist. It's fun, the comedic banter between Danny Rand and Luke Cage, them just going back and forth, Luke being all enthusiastic about getting the band back together, Heroes for Hire, and Luke,
you mean Danny?
Danny being all enthusiastic, mm-hmm. And Luke just being like, nope, we're not doing this. No fiddle faddle.
No more fiddle faddle.
Which, that's kind of, I mean, it works because the book is so funny, but it part of me is also like, yeah, that's so contrived, this new catchphrase. It reminds me too much of the Blam murdered you.
Kind of. It sort of reminded me a little bit of Mr. T from the 80s A-Team. You know, no more jibber jabber and whatnot. But, you know, in all seriousness, the buddy cop aspect of this story is what sells it. And it's the chemistry, the easy chemistry between the two characters, which sold the first volume of Power Man and Iron Fist, as always, kind of left a great memory for a lot of people. And they even touch on it. You know, David F. Walker even touches on that in the story, that the partnership, this duo, left such an impression on so many people in New York, the people who understood and followed superheroics, and even the supervillains understood that this was a formidable tandem, and they were, you know, whether or not they got along all the time, they were always, you know, they would always be there for each other and, you know, be in a really effective tag team or team up or partnership. So, you know, I really like this issue. Like I said, it was a great follow-up. It really delves into, you know, what happened in the first issue with this artifact, the Super Soul Stone, which is probably to me the weakest part of the story because it sounds so silly. But, you know, we're going to find out more about what this artifact is capable of in the next issue because we see a hint of it as a part of the cliffhanger that ends this issue.
And I like the back and forth between the two gangsters that are... following them, watching them get into fight with Black Tarantula and was it Magilla Gorilla? Power Man calls him.
It's Gorilla Man.
They're like, see, if we ran in there, that'd be us getting our ass kicked right there. True. And then the guy just always finds that true.
Yeah, it's, you know, what's funny is that I think more and more, you know, I don't want to call it a trend, but it's definitely looking at things from the low level supervillains point of view, like as done by Nick Spencer in Superior Foes. I think that that viewpoint is going to be part of more and more books.
And it may just be me projecting, but. It's like I can feel Walker's having so much more fun with this than, say, like Cyborg over at DC, which
really
he ran anymore. To me, it feels like he's having more fun. Maybe just because it's a funnier book.
Yeah,
I need to check out his Shaft series that came out like 2 months ago. I think the first two issues of that are out. I need to see how that reads. But yeah, Power Man, Iron Fist, keep the good times rolling.
Yeah, no, this was a lot of fun. Like I said, it's a great buddy comedy. You know, I'm a fan. Listen, I've read Power Man and Iron Fist on and off again in the 80s when I was growing up. So, you know, this is a great return to form for the tag team.
Yeah, I need to go on Marvel Unlimited and check out some of the old runs, see what I'm missing.
Sure enough. All right, how about we move to, you want to stick to Marvel and just do Extraordinary X-Men?
Sure.
All right, so this is what, the first chapter of the storyline?
Yep, the first part of Apocalypse Wars, and supposedly it's not like a crossover, because all three X-Books are going to tell their own tales starring Apocalypse.
Mm-hmm.
Not sure how that, I thought it was just going to be like, I guess when I thought of it as an event, I thought it would just be like a one-month thing, but I guess the story from this will carry over into Extraordinary X-Men number 9.
Is it like what they're doing with Standoff, where you don't have to read all the different tie-in books to get the story?
I believe that's how it was explained, at least in the interviews and all the press stuff for it. Like, each book would tell its own tale of like Apocalypse. Like, Extraordinary X-Men's dealing with Apocalypse, even though we haven't seen him yet. All New X-Men's dealing with Genesis, who is the clone of Apocalypse. And Uncanny X-Men's dealing with Archangel, who's, you know, the herald of Apocalypse.
Oh, that's how it breaks down. Okay, thanks for that.
Yeah, we'll see if that actually pans out when the other books come out, but that's how they described it. So yes, you can read, if you're just reading Uncanny X-Men, you can just read Uncanny. So the issue starts with, how did the issue start?
Well, the issue starts with
Wolverine and Storm.
And Storm kind of...
Old Man Logan and Storm getting chummy with each other.
Yeah, just kind of dealing with, you know, what the current situation, what their current situation is, because, you know, we talk about this, and I bring this up a lot, that this is the X-Men book that feels like an X-Men book. And you, it was funny, made me laugh when I saw that that was the note that you put into the show notes, that this feels like an X-Men story. And well, that's what... Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, it's the first issue of Extraordinary that has that gives me this feeling.
Mm-hmm. I've had this feeling since Extraordinary started, though, as opposed to, you know, what's going on in Uncanny, as opposed to what's going on in All New. So, you know, there's nothing new on this book, and, you know, Jeff Lemire is really, I think... captured what you know, what like classic X-Men action is.
And Cerebra gets a reading of, is it 200 or 500 new mutant signatures?
A whole bunch.
Which shouldn't be possible because the Terrigen Mist has left mutants
sterile.
Thank you, I couldn't get the word out. So Colossus takes a team of the young X-Men to investigate over in Tokyo, I believe it is, because mm-hmm. he's been taking on a mentorship role with the young, some of the young kids like Blob and or Glob and Anol.
Anol.
Yeah, and some girl that talks to a floating brain.
Yes.
Not even sure who she is.
Yeah, Martha, and I forget the character's name, but yeah, absolutely.
So so they go to investigate, and they find an old school X-Men villain is behind everything because this person's created some time traveling equipment. He's trying to find his own way to cure the mutant problem of them and the Terrigen Mist by, I guess, sending them to the future.
Right. This particular X-Men villain is a refugee from a reality that is related to Age of Apocalypse. So that's a big hint.
And a fight ensues. Colossus and the kids are thrown into the future. The rest of the X-Men arrive in Tokyo. They are able to reverse engineer this character's time traveling equipment to go chase after them in the future. Of course, the Colossus and his team have only been gone a couple of minutes in our time, but when they get to the future, they find out that they've been in the future for a couple of years now, so the kids are at least young adults.
If not older, right?
Yeah, if not older. And then they run into the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse, the new Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse.
Right.
And unlike what Lee and Cool reported, that only one of the new Four Horsemen is a mutant, two of them are mutants if you know the history of the four characters.
Right. Two of them are not, and it's the two of them that are not that are pretty surprising.
Yeah. So I wonder how the time traveling will affect young Jean Grey.
Oh, God,
that she couldn't travel in time anymore, or she just can't travel backwards.
Oh, jeez,
because they're stuck in time, but apparently not stuck in time because they can travel to. She can travel to the future and
stupid time travel.
Yeah.
All right.
I just thought of something. Off topic, but not really. I've read a book a couple weeks ago, and it had Hellion in it, and I can't remember why. It wasn't an X-Men book.
David Haller?
Yeah.
No kidding.
Was it an Inhuman book, maybe? He showed up somewhere. Oh, that's going to kill me now that I can't remember what it was. Maybe it was Uncanny X-Men, maybe?
Okay.
I have to Google. But anyway, back to reviews.
All right. Hey guys, tell me about what happened in. I hate to flip back to DC, but we were talking about this before we went on the air. Tell me about what happened in Superman American Alien number 5. Feel free to spoil.
Superman starts going around. Well, Clark Kent starts going around Metropolis saving people with his makeshift costume that we saw some of the parts being assembled last issue. Case in point, Batman's cape is now his cape. And he's got goggles and whatnot.
I mean, basically what you see on the cover here
yeah.
is some sort of like vest with he spray painted a Superman symbol on and he's attached a cape to it. And he's got this old like World War II fighter ace pilot leather hat and goggles on for flying. He's just finding his way. I mean, that's what it is he's learning how to be a superhero.
The real highlight for me was Francis Manapul's art, for one. It's just a beautiful-looking book, every page. And, oh, I don't remember what else I liked in this. A classic Superman villain appears that Superman is able to take out. And, of course, it leads back to Lex Luthor. That shouldn't be too much of a spoiler because his greatest archenemy is Lex Luthor. And then Luthor just starts berating Superman at how dumb he is because Superman sort of storms into Luthor's office with no game plan of how he's going to take Luthor down or get their authorities to go after him, and Luthor just systematically breaks down every point of, you know, you have no way to stop me, you're stupid, you're a little kid. And then Superman sort of goes back and has a talk with Lois Lane and his civilian identity as Clark Kent, and then goes back one last time to pay Luthor a last visit. And to me, it didn't really, like, make up for the way Luthor talked to him before, but if it made Clark feel better, sure.
You see, that's the one problem I have with this, is that it's obviously an alternate, you know, storytelling. It's dealing more with the mythos of Superman. This isn't necessarily retelling his origin in the New 52. And we've kind of dealt with that before, but I just felt like he comes off as being so stupid, especially against Luthor, and he comes across as so
naive.
With a
shot at King's public schools.
I blame Common Core. But, for a guy who's an investigative journalist, who's been able to get a job at the Daily Planet, who, you know, he's friends with Lois Lane, who's this Pulitzer Prize-winning author. Maybe she's not there yet, but I mean, obviously these are intelligent people, and they just come across as just so dim-witted that it just... To me, he's having that conversation with Luthor, and I just kept waiting for him, like, okay, well, now he's going to hit him back with this or something else, and he doesn't, and he's just neutered and leaves, and it just, I don't know, it left this bad taste in my mouth where this doesn't fit. Like, this isn't how the character is supposed to be. Like, I understand, again, it goes back to it's a different universe, I get it, it's an alternate, you know, what could be history, whatever, but it's something about it just feels off, just feels wrong. And there are certain things that I appreciate, like I think it's a neat idea that, you know, he tussles with Batman, he gets the idea of like, oh, well, I need a costume, you know, of course, you know, that makes sense, but his interaction with Luthor just felt wrong, and there was just something off about the whole thing. And even the way he gets his quote-unquote revenge on Luthor doesn't really feel like it accomplished anything, and B, it puts him right back in Luthor's crosshairs of everything that Luthor said earlier on when he storms into his office in the first place. His, you know, quote-unquote revenge is an act of vandalism that's just as easily going to get him into trouble. So, I don't know. Something about the story, there are certain aspects of these stories that I enjoy, the alternate look, the different take, the new way of looking at it that nobody's ever done before, but then at the same time, there's a lot of it that just doesn't sit right with everything else that goes on in the stories. So, I enjoyed it more than I disliked it, but I still got done with it and just kind of went, I don't really care for this one as much. Doesn't quite fit like some of the others do.
Gotcha.
I can see that. Because, yeah, like you say,
go ahead.
I was going to say quickly, the whole how Superman went back at Luthor, it was like, it felt like sort of a nanny nanny boo boo.
Yeah. Okay. Alrighty. Sorry to bounce back to DC, but I was interested to hear, since I saw that both of you read it, interested to hear what you had to say on it. How about I jump around a little bit more to Huck number 5. I see that Tim read this.
I did.
So I enjoyed this. I'm glad that the fun has kind of gotten back into this book, because after the betrayal of, or you know, the pseudo betrayal of what we find out to be, spoiler alert, not Huck's brother, but you know, what we find out is that Huck and his mother have been captured, and by the scientists that had been initially experimenting on his mom. And they have sinister plans in place for both of them. And this is about, you know, Huck and his mom reconnecting and coming up with a way to get out of their predicament. And the way they do it is pretty, you know, it's just a lot of, you know, kind of, it's creative and it's fun. I like that the spirit of Huck has been kind of re-energized in this book, because over the last couple of issues, he's been kind of down, kind of, you know, as he's exposed to more cynical and or sinister behavior, his innocence is kind of buried underneath just, you know, just the general air of what's going on. But to see him in this issue kind of, you know, re-energized and bringing back that kind of like innocence / I don't want to call it naivete, he's just really, you know, he wants to do good, and that's where, you know, he sort of bounces back in this issue in a big way.
Yeah, I had to read issue 4 before issue 5. But
reread it, you mean?
Well, I didn't even read 4 until this week.
Okay.
This week, but I got caught up. Both were fun reads. Like you mentioned, the betrayal of Tom Sawyer last issue, or Tom, as they call mm-hmm. him. One thing, just a small little gripe about Rafael Albuquerque's art. There's a lot of missing backgrounds on his pages.
Yeah.
You know, just backgrounds filled with color. But, you know, he makes up for it by having that two-page spread at the beginning showing the Moscow facility that they're being held in.
Right.
It was different the way that Mark Millar flipped the script of the scientist going and getting his revenge on all the people that like threatened his life and talked down to him after Huck's mother escaped, and he had to like sort of bite his tongue and do the work and sort of just have confidence in himself that he would find her one day. It took him a little while, but he did it. And of course, the first thing he does is kill someone that used to threaten him all the time, mm-hmm. like a high-ranking official.
Right.
Of course, Huck escapes with his mom's help, and
we go from there.
Yeah, we go from there. The next issue six, is the end of, I guess, his first arc. I don't know if this is one of the Mark Millar books that's going to continue on after like 6 months off or whatever, or another year to return or not. But if you enjoy the tales of Huckleberry Finn and Tom Sawyer and want to see them flipped into a sort of a new age comic book tale, mm-hmm. definitely check out Huck.
Cool. All right. Are we in sort of rapid fire mode? Because I know Dirt wants to probably wrap up so he can finish packing.
Yeah, everything else I can do quickly.
Cool, because I think I've only got one book left.
Yeah, I only have one left, too.
Well, go ahead and start with yours.
I will do A&A, The Adventures of Archer and Armstrong #1 from Valiant Comics. If you're not familiar with Archer and Armstrong, they're sort of in the vein of Power Man and Iron Fist, another comedic duo, but this time from Valiant Comics. Archer is a young man who was raised and grew up in like a religious cult, and from day one he's been like indoctrinated or trained to take out this evil power that turns out to be Archer, or Armstrong, I'm sorry.
Okay.
But, of course, they end up becoming friends, so now they work together to battle evil. And Armstrong's origin is he's this, like, centuries-old guy who's immortal, brother of the Eternal Warrior at Valiant, and then they have another brother who had a series that probably ended a little while ago. I can't think of Ivar, the Time Walker.
Okay,
yeah.
So they all three of them are immortals. But Armstrong is the sort of loud, drunk, obnoxious one, as you can see on the cover here of him holding the beer bottle. Archer's got his crossbow. Armstrong's got his satchel and the empty bottle in his hand. And the satchel comes into play.
Is it a bag of holding?
It's a bottomless bag. Throughout the years, he's assembled items, some favorite items, some enemies that he might have come across, and I guess he just happens to just throw everything into his bag. And it comes to find out he gets like a note that a close friend that he knew years ago that we see in the beginning of the issue of them on an adventure. That same friend passes away in the present day of old age, I assume. And whatever his death causes Armstrong to go into his satchel to find something. Mm-hmm. He leaves a nice note for Armstrong or Archer of what he's doing, but while he tied a rope to go down into the satchel, he's left the satchel open, and now a bunch of different creatures are starting to climb their way out to escape. Archer gets into a fight with some of these sort of grasshopper-looking creatures and a talking amphibian man in a trench coat and a fedora. And Archer goes down to the satchel after Armstrong, or Mr. Armstrong, as he calls him. More craziness ensues, fighting bird-flipping satchel creatures is what I'm going to call them. Or goblins, I think they call them, is the term Archer calls them. He finds Mr. Armstrong, but not before one of Armstrong's arch enemies that he's held captive in the satchel tries to fight him. But of course, Armstrong doesn't remember the guy. The guy takes offense, and we have to find out next issue why Armstrong is so intent on finding this one liquor bottle that has something to do with the guy that passed away. So it's one of those series where, you know, it's not integral to the overall Valiant universe, but if you just want an enjoyable read, with some good art from David LaFuente and a newer writer, I'll say. He's newer because people might not be familiar with him, Rafer Roberts, who both of them just signed exclusive contracts with Valiant, as they announced ahead of their C2E2 appearance.
A lot of exclusive contracts nowadays.
Yeah, we'll get to all that in the news. But that's Archer and Armstrong number one.
Okay. I'll get to my other book that I read this week. It's Astonishing Ant-Man number 6. And this book, this issue, is actually centered on Cassie Lang, that is Ant-Man's daughter. And she basically gets up to speed as to what's been going on in this Ant-Man book, basically unbeknownst to her, as she's realized that, you know, Scott Lang has basically been shadowing her and technically spying on her, while ant-sized, while Cassie's been trying to live her life and adjust to new surroundings, in Miami, after being transplanted from New York. So what's teased at the end of the last issue, spoiler alert, even though I'm talking about what's on the cover of this issue, what's teased is that Cassie is basically trying to recapture her her powers so that she can return to superheroing. Without spoiling too much, there's come a point where in Cassie's kind of really screwed up character history, she's lost her powers, which were based on being exposed to Pym particles, and recently she's gotten to the point where she wants to regain some power so that she can go back to superheroing, and she comes up with a scheme which was pretty obviously kind of half thought out, and the scheme is that she's going to go to the power broker who's been recruiting people to become henchmen through this Hench X app that's been prevalent in the Ant-Man storylines, and she plans on, spoiler alert, flipping the powers against against the people who are behind the app and taking them down. And what's funny about this is that the new power broker figures all this out and basically pitches her on a deal to give her powers not for free, but in exchange for, a quid pro quo, in exchange for her doing something for the power broker that doesn't seem so wrong. And I thought that was a great twist. I thought that, it was kind of cool that, a really simple character turn, would be, obviously picked up on by the characters within the story and be like, hey, that's kind of silly. We know this is what's going to happen if we give you these powers. How about, we do something else with this? And I thought that was a cool little twist. And at the end of the story, we're introduced to a new costumed identity that carries a name that I believe is maybe the second or third hero named Stinger, and that is Cassie Lang's new superhero code name. So yes, I rang the bell. But yeah, no, she's introduced to the Marvel Universe at large as a new character, and we'll see where this character goes going forward. But I was actually I like this issue. This is a cool issue focused strictly on Cassie and what her status quo is and how she's choosing to shake it up. So, this was actually, a pretty fun read as well. I'm surprised. I'm glad this week was full of fun reads, and this was just one of many.
It was a good week. When I found out what comic Hellion was in, I did a Google search. It was whatever the last issue of Uncanny Avengers.
Okay.
Because he attacked the Tillin, Atalanta, as they say on the Disney XD shows.
Right. All right, Dirt, you're up.
Okay.
I'm gonna try to keep it quick on some of these. But Martian Manhunter 10, we finally got the actual, real, honest-to-goodness, no fooling, no changes. We mean it this time, the absolute secret origin of John Jones, or John Johns, or however you want to call him.
Hold on. This is it. This is the definitive origin.
Well, because before, they've always dealt with what his origin was on Earth, like how he came to Earth and became a private detective, or he became a police officer, or he, whatever. This actually goes back to Mars and redefines his origin on Mars a little differently than what we've always known it to be. And it's very entertaining. I don't want to give away, but we know from this series that he was somehow developed to be a weapon, to be used on Earth, and because he figured out what was going to happen, he split himself into these different personalities that then came back together to reconstitute him into the Martian Manhunter. This explains why he was able to split his consciousness into these different pieces, where that idea came from, why he would have the temperament to turn against this weapon that he was built into. Like, it explains all of that kind of stuff. So all these little secrets that we've picked up along the way in this series, this is the issue that finally lays them out. Like, okay, here's the conversation. This is what happened. This is why this fits in. This is how this works. So it's one of those where all of those little threads come back together, and it's a great, you know, feeling to finally, okay, now that makes sense. And this part that seemed silly before, now it works out. Okay, now I understand. So this was a great story as far as telling finally his story and how it all works together. The only problem is, of course, is that it comes at the expense of pushing the current narrative. So basically we were left with this cliffhanger in issue 9 where all the surviving Martians on this alternate Mars are being put onto these rockets in order to take them to Earth so they escape, so that Mars can be destroyed and everyone lives. And you don't get really any more of that because it goes into this other story of explaining everything. But it was a good, like, this is, I think, one of those Martian Manhunter stories that the character really needed, because he is a character that I've always felt had a lot of possibilities, and they've just never really done anything with him. So they finally sat down and figured something out, and it's a great story. And when they make this into the animated movie, I'm really looking forward to watching that. Not that they've announced one, but I'm just, you know, saying at some point someone's going to do it, and it's going to be great.
Let me quickly jump in. Martian Manhunter's origin reminds me of Piccolo from Dragon Ball Z. Him and Piccolo and Kami were separated, and they had to reform to create a super Namek. All the different parts of Martian Manhunter now create a super Martian Manhunter.
I've never seen Dragon Ball Z.
I'm only vaguely familiar with Dragon Ball Z, and I love how it's the green people.
Yes, green. The green aliens from the planet. Okay, continue.
All right. Yeah, I can't back you up on that, but I don't doubt you. Okay. Sinestro. Sinestro's daughter, who's the former Green Lantern, is now the head of the Green Lantern Corps. Earth was attacked, and the Sinestro Corps is now the guardians of Earth. They made a deal a while back to be the ones who watch over Earth instead of the Green Lanterns. And so when Earth was attacked, they sent out rings to Earth, and a bunch of heroes on Earth, like Superman and Wonder Woman and Deathstroke and Harley Quinn and all these different characters that you're familiar with in the DC Universe, got Yellow Lantern rings. And now she has to decide what is the future of the Corps. And, of course, you know, her dad.
Did you mute us again?
Dirt. Come in, Dirt. Earth, Dirt.
A Yellow Lantern.
You totally muted yourself, dude.
There's a thing saying my network connection is experiencing difficulties.
Oh, okay. We hear you now, though.
All right. So basically, she doesn't want to be a Yellow Lantern. You know, she doesn't like her dad. She doesn't want to be part of the Corps, but he's injured, and so he hands it over to her, and she basically decides that she'll do it kind of the same way that Guy Gardner became a Red Lantern. The way Guy Gardner, you know, I'm going to keep an eye on these guys, I'm going to keep them in line, and I'm going to stop them from getting out of hand. And she's going to try to do the same thing with the Yellow Lanterns. And you just get this feeling like she's going to fail, and she's going to fail horribly, and she's going to fail because her dad's going to totally betray her. But that's what she's setting out to do, and it's just been a really good story. I've really been surprised at how much I've enjoyed it, because Sinestro was a series that I really had no interest in for a long time. I just decided to read it because I saw all the other, you know, DC heroes appearing in it, and I figured I'd give it a shot just to see what was up. And I'm glad I did, because it's paid off. It's been a good story. One of the oddball books this week was Ghostbusters Deviations. This is IDW is doing a bunch of what ifs this month. And the Ghostbusters what if is, what if they had not crossed the streams at the end of the movie?
Whoa!
In New York. And basically, what you see on this cover is basically what New York has turned into. The Stay Puft Marshmallow Man is just living in New York and wreaking havoc and destroying things. And the only problem is Stay Puft Marshmallow Man comes back to them and says, "Hey guys, this sucks." Mm. He's like, "I'm a demon. I'm a destroyer of worlds, and you've turned me into this fluffy, marshmallowy thing that nobody takes seriously." So he wants to make a deal for them to figure out how to get him out of the body and send him back to his own dimension. And, you know, this really was well done. This, for being a what-if and a quote-unquote story that doesn't matter, as what-ifs tend to be, this one was very entertaining. And if for no other reason, you need to check this out, because the humor of this is on par with that original movie. Some of the twists that they throw in here and the jokes that go along with it, I mean, this very easily could have been the next chapter. You know, this could have been the third act of the movie if the end of the second act was they failed at, you know, stopping Gozer and the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man from coming to New York. I mean, this was very well done.
Okay.
So I enjoyed that a whole lot more than I expected for, you know, what are technically considered to be throwaway stories. And then I guess the last thing I really have to talk about, there were a bunch of books I wanted to read. I just haven't got a chance to read. Like, I wanted to read Saber Rider and the Star Sheriffs, which is based off the 80s cartoon. I've got it. I just haven't had a chance to get to it yet, but it's definitely something I'm looking forward to. You know, stuff like that I wanted to read, I haven't been able to. But I did read Deadpool and the Mercs for Money number 2. And this was, it was good, but it was not great.
Okay.
One of the problems with this story is that he's, Colin Bunn is, you know, trying to find that balance between having an oddball, silly story with Deadpool and all of these guys who work for him, but at the same time having a story that's worth, you know, continuing with and reading. And so he's able to push the story along, but it comes at a sacrifice of some of the humor. Not that it's necessarily unfunny, but there's just, you know, not jokes. It's not like the jokes fall flat like in the other Deadpool series. It's just that there's not a lot of moments of humor. There are some in here, and they're pretty good, but it just doesn't have the same energy, I think, as what the first issue had, just because he is pushing that story forward. Now, it does build, and you do get the feeling like there's going to be some crazy stuff happening in issue 3, but this particular one is just, I guess, a bridge to get you there, and as that, it just really doesn't have a whole lot as far as the, you know, the entertaining humor that you've come to expect from Deadpool, especially with the movie being out there. People right. looking for that kind of crazy, zany stuff. It's not happening in this issue, but it definitely feels like some of that's coming in issue 3. So, again, it's good. It's just not great, like the first one was. So, a little disappointing, but overall, you know, it feels like it's going to be pretty solid.
Gotcha.
But that is going to do it for me.
Oh, you don't want to talk about Squadron? Okay.
Oh, I forgot about Squadron Supreme. Well, okay, I'll say this quickly. I like the series. I like what they've done with some of the characters. They cycled out a character and cycled in a different character to take that character's place. Mm-hmm. You can kind of get it from the cover, but I still won't, you know, give it completely away.
Sure.
But it makes sense. It fits for that particular power set and character. I'm just glad that they're out of Weird World.
Weird kind of interlude, right?
Yeah, and especially for a team that's out of place in the Marvel Universe anyway, to throw them into Weird World just doesn't really make a lot of sense, but I still like the characters. I like the story overall.
But there is a return of a character. I was flipping through this, and we talked about it before we went on the air. There is a return, a major return, that was teased in the Weird World Secret Wars miniseries, but it finally comes to fruition in, of all places, the Squadron Supreme series.
But then they leave Weird World, so.
Right, but at least this character has been resurrected.
The character appears and then is gone. But at least you know that they're there.
Right.
I guess, is the key thing. And you also, in the story, they defeat the villain, but they kind of don't defeat the villain.
Right.
Apparently, somehow, he makes this appearance at the end and makes it clear that he's not gone for good. And I don't know how that's going to work out, but, you know, again, he'll probably appear in some other series, is the feeling that I'm getting. It's one of those where he's going to appear in, like, Doctor Strange, maybe, in 6 months.
And more than likely.
What? I thought he was gone. It'll say, right. Read Squadron Supreme, you know, trade paperback number 1, now available, you know, one of those type of things.
Exactly. So,
I still enjoy the, I enjoy the characters, I enjoy the series.
Yeah, I stopped reading it, but I want to catch up now on what happened when they went to Weird World, because that's when I stopped reading it, because I was just like, what are they doing there? But I'm glad that, you know, James Robinson snuck in this particular character development, you know, this returning character I was joking about earlier, or referring to. I want to see how that comes about. So,
well, and the fun thing is, we've talked before about how the Squadron Supreme is set up to be analogs of different characters from the DC Universe. I mean, that was always the point of it, and it's always worked out that way. And this issue plays on that very heavily with Hyperion and with Night Owl. And those two characters, they don't interact with each other.
Or Nighthawk.
Or Nighthawk, that's what I meant. But the way they interact with each other, or not interact with each other, but the way they interact in the story makes it very clear that this is the Superman of the Marvel Universe, and this is the Batman of the Marvel Universe with the way the story unfolds. It makes it very clear that, for instance, I'm just going to give away the Hyperion instance, he finds out that he's susceptible to magic.
Yep.
And it's something that's never come up before, he's never really thought about, but that is the same thing with Superman. Superman has that exact same issue. And the way it plays out here and the way he reacts to it is one of those moments where it's like, wait a minute, like,
When did this start?
Yeah, and he has that look on his face like, huh, I never really thought about it before. And it's like, yeah, we all have because it's Superman's, it's one of his big things. So I love the way they threw that in there and the way they threw in these other little, these wink-wink, nudge-nudge moments with the characters that make it very clear that this is their version of the Justice League, so to speak. So,
I'm like I said, I'll be glad to now, you know, kind of catch up because of the development I was referring to. I'm still glad that you like this book. I want to give it more of a shot, but I don't know if it's going to make it into the buy list, you know, the physical pull. So,
well, and I really don't like any of the Avengers books right now. Like, there's nothing. I don't hate any of the Avengers books. It's just all of the Avengers books right now, to me, just feel very meh.
They're not telling any big stories. That's the thing, right? But what I was going to say is none of the stories feel as weighty as what we've been reading for so many years.
And I don't feel any big draws with any of the characters. The way you had the tension between, say, Namor and Black Panther, you don't really have that type of thing going on with any of the other characters, really. And I just don't feel like those characters, those stories are building to anything right now. And even Standoff has been a little
I don't think they are building to anything, and that's probably what you miss, because having the Avengers books in Hickman's hands, he was obviously building towards something. That's the thing.
And he would use all of the books. Like, Avengers World was one of those titles that nobody cared about and really didn't seem to have any place, and so then they gave it to him. And he said, okay, well, this is how I'm going to develop this part of the story, and I'm going to throw these characters that don't really fit anywhere else into that book. And then suddenly it became an important part of the story.
Exactly.
And I just don't feel that with any of the Avengers books right now. So I like reading Squadron Supreme just because, again, it's the wink, wink, nudge, nudge to the Justice League and the way they play out a lot of the interactions between the characters. At least it feels like there's
a purpose.
It's telling the story on another level. Because you have that fourth wall type of stuff going on, that the readers are going to pick up on outside of what's technically happening in the story. So
understood.
I enjoy that. But anyway, that's going to do it for me. I am getting up at 3 o'clock in the morning, so I've got to get going so I can get some sleep.
Click of the week.
Oh gosh.
Good job.
I hadn't even thought about it. You know what?
I was about to say, if you need time, we'll do a quick ad.
No. I can go ahead and do a quick click of the week real quick because I want to pick Iron Man just because I like the way the story was structured and the way they played with it. But when I really think about to what I enjoyed, it's got to be Web Warriors. I mean,
nice!
Web Warriors is got to be the click because that is now that that arc is done, I can sit down with all those issues and read them again.
Yeah, and don't you feel like at least it came to some sort of climax that made sense as opposed to that Vandal Savage insanity?
Well, and it felt like the characters now are different than where they were at the beginning of the story. I mean, we've only gotten 5 issues, and it feels like their world is different and gone through something that has changed them, which always gives the story weight. And
agreed.
So for as fun as it is, it still feels like there's something going on with the characters that makes it worth reading. So Web Warriors is going to be my click of the week.
Nice. I think Web Warriors is close for me because I can't praise that book enough and how surprising it is for me that it has remained on my physical pull list and it's one of the first things I try to read when it comes out. But this week I have to go with Spider-Woman number 5. It was just, I've mentioned it earlier on the on previous shows. It's graduated to my physical pull list. I did pick up a copy of this week. Dennis Hopeless and Javier Rodriguez tell a wonderful tale in this, and this is a book I actually plan on sharing with people who may not be reading comics right now and show them that, you know, the art form is capable of so much, and, this is just a great example of it. So I'm going to go with Spider-Woman number 5.
And Tim?
I was thinking of doing the same thing with Spider-Woman number 5, and that was showing it to people that might get a kick out of seeing how Mother/superhero deals with her new life and what all that entails. So, yes, Spider-Woman number 5 is my click of the week as well.
Nice. Look at that. We went all Spider-Man's corner of the universe, Spider-People.
And I think it's probably a safe bet that Roddy's going to pick Power Man and Iron Fist, though.
Yeah, probably. Probably.
All right.
Roddy, when you hear this, tweet us or message us, let us know, so we'll make sure that's up there.
All right, I am going to bed. I will see you guys in a week. I'm going to throw some stuff up probably on Twitter and on Vine over the next couple days while I'm checking all the stuff up there, and we'll have a full report for you guys next week.
Yeah!
Follow him at... Follow him on Twitter at PCN_Dirt. That's Twitter and Vine.
All right, guys. I'll see you.
See ya.
All righty. Safe trip. Cool.
All right.
So now we get to scroll up. Oh, wait. Are you going to do the ad?
Yes. This episode of Comic Book Chronicles is sponsored by Busted Tees, your home for funny, awesome, cool t-shirts that are sure to get your friends' attention. Busted Tees puts many of their popular shirt designs on sale each week. Choose from several eye-catching t-shirts inspired by pop culture, such as BB-8 Light Thumbs Up and Droid Evolution, Star Wars The Force Awakens, Rick and Morty, Rick and Morty as Legos, Bernie Larry 2016, Pretty Good, Curb Your Enthusiasm, Simojis, the main faces of Samuel L. Jackson as emojis, and much more are on sale. To help keep our podcast free, order from Busted Tees by going to cspn.us, that's cspn.us, then clicking on the Keep Our Podcast Free link. Click on the Busted Tees banner and then shop for awesome t-shirts. Busted Tees through cspn.us. Do it today.
Nice.
As I go back to the top.
Exactly.
Not going to spend too much time on the news either, but we'll touch on a couple of things. Let's see. In cinematic news, Thor and X-Men First Class writer Zach Stentz wrote Kevin Smith's Flash episode.
Okay.
So Kevin Smith will be directing an episode of The Flash coming up. Taron Egerton, Jack Rayner, Jack O'Connell, and more are on the Young Han Solo shortlist.
Cool.
Conroy and Hamill return to Batman and Joker for animated Killing Joke adaptation.
Yeah, I think we had talked about this in a previous episode, but I think now it's been completely confirmed.
Okay. Gotham Season 3 officially gets Batman beginning another year.
Say what? Are they actually going to introduce Batman character?
Let's see. Description. Fox's Gotham has delved even deeper into Batman's beginnings in recent weeks by the additions of Mr. Freeze, Hugo Strange, and more. Fox has officially renewed its Bat prequel drama for a third season, airing this fall. Let me double-click here, make sure I'm not missing anything. Nope. Yeah, it's just a funny worded headline.
Okay.
Basically, it's renewed for a third season.
Gotcha.
Oscar nominated. Oh, wait. Did Roddy had a note somewhere for. Maybe it's this next one coming up. Oscar nominated and Emmy winning actress Sheree Agdashlo.
Sheree Agdashlo.
Agdashlo. From House of Sand and Fog, House of Saddam has joined the third installment in the Star Trek series, Star Trek Beyond, which stars Chris Pine as Captain Kirk. Blah, blah, blah. Roddy Cat has a note that says she is Christian on The Expanse and was Dr. Kavita Ryo in X-Men 3.
Okay.
I don't even know who that was in X-Men 3.
I don't remember X-Men 3 very well.
Yeah. Apparently Tom Cruise was in the Preacher pilot.
Okay.
Screened at South by Southwest last week. And the series will premiere after Fear the Walking Dead's mid-season finale. Okay. This week also brought the first look at the Supergirl and Flash crossover episode. Common, the actor and rapper, revealed his Suicide Squad role. And Ice Cube talks Marvel and Spider-Man. Because I think apparently he was going to make an appearance in the third chapter of the Amazing Spider-Man series from Sony.
Mm-hmm.
Ice Cube replied that if he wasn't playing Spider-Man, he's not in the movie. So apparently, I guess they were rumors.
Yeah.
Lobo feature turns to Wonder Woman screenwriter.
Wow. So the film is back in development. And according to The Wrap, Wonder Woman screenwriter Jason Fuchs will write the film.
Yup. Batman v Superman's Henry Cavill. Cavill? Is it Cavill or Cavill?
Not sure.
Proves Clark Kent's glasses are disguised enough.
Yeah, so apparently this dude was walking around in a Superman t-shirt in the middle of Times Square and nobody recognized him. But guess what? If you're in Times Square, ain't nobody looking at you. They're looking up at the signs. So, you know, it's a tourist trap. There's no one looking. You're not people watching in Times Square. You're looking up. So that's, you know, I think that's a false positive right there, people.
And Sally Field, who played Aunt May in the Sony Spider-Man, Amazing Spider-Man reboot that we spoke about earlier, is bad-mouthing her experience playing Aunt May.
Mm-hmm.
So she's been getting a couple of interviews. I know I heard her on the Howard Stern show this week.
Really?
Even though I didn't hear any comments about Spider-Man because I wasn't actually listening to much of the interview, but yeah, Field told Howard Stern via Entertainment Weekly
that it wasn't her kind of movie.
Yeah, and some other unkind words.
She basically pooped all over it, like Triumph the Insult Comic Dog.
Poop, poop, poop.
You know, it's for her to poop on. So yeah, listen. You know what? There's not much good that's come out of those Amazing Spider-Man movies. The only good, honestly, is Emma Stone being Gwen Stacy. That's pretty much it. Although Andrew Garfield as Spider-Man wasn't terrible.
Yeah, he was the best part, of course.
Yeah, him and Emma Stone, that's it. All right. Do you want to do another ad, or you want to wait till we finish up before we do another ad?
Go ahead and do it.
I'll just do real quick. I'll do a quick one for Skull Candy. Let me tell you about Skull Candy. Skull Candy makes the best headphones, earbuds, and gaming headsets, all with lifetime warranties. Skull Candy produces many types of audio accessories, including headphones, sports earbuds, Xbox gaming headsets, PlayStation gaming headsets, DJ headphones, iPod headphones, and MP3 headphones. And now, for the listeners of the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles, Skull Candy offers free standard shipping on your order. To help keep our podcast free, order from Skull Candy by going to cspn.us, that's cspn.us, then clicking on the Keep Our Podcast Free link. Click on the Skull Candy banner, and then shop for high-quality audio accessories with free standard shipping. Skull Candy Audio through cspn.us. Do it today. Cool.
Ching.
All right, so let's get to past the clickbait.
Comic book news.
Yep. All right.
Hot Toys reveals their Captain America Civil War Hawkeye collectible with a little something extra.
Yep, and it features a tiny but very cool new addition to the Archer's arsenal, which was teased in the trailer.
Okay.
Let's see.
Skip some of that.
This is different. I wanted to touch on this real quick. I don't know. I didn't read this. This is interesting to me. Are we seeing the return of Damon Hellstrom to Marvel in a big way, to Netflix even? Apparently his character has been mentioned in a number of places. Obviously, it's going to be in Patsy Walker, a.k.a. Hellcat. That's his ex-wife.
That was one of the places they were hypothesizing.
Right. So it's kind of interesting to see this character kind of get more play, especially with the return of Magic, you know, kind of being put at the forefront in Marvel.
And so we talked about the new Four Horsemen of Apocalypse and the Extraordinary X-Men. Mm-hmm. And Roddy leaves a note. I count two, but maybe I've bumped my head.
Ah, yep. You're right, Roddy.
There's a new Mask series in development at IDW. Fans,
that's pretty cool.
Mobile Armored Strike Command. Penguin Random House Foundation is offering $22,000 in scholarships for graphic novel program.
Nice.
Let's see. John Wagner plans to kill off a major Judge Dredd character in Judge Dredd in 2000 AD. That's what I was looking for.
Mm-hmm.
Rocket and Groot pilot into prose. So they're coming to a children's book thanks to Tom Engelberger's Rocket and Groot Stranded on Planet Strip Mall, which debuted last week.
Nice.
The greatest crossover of all time is coming to an end with Transformers versus G.I. Joe number 13. We got to talking about Transformers at my comic shop last night. A guy came in that I guess is enjoying what they're doing with the big issue 50 and Optimus mm-hmm. Prime kind of turning heel.
Yeah.
We both go the wrestling reference route.
Yeah.
Titan Comics renews with Comixology and expands to Amazon Kindle. Marvel unveils some Black Panther merchandise ahead of his Captain America Civil War debut and his new comic book series.
It's funny, I was going to tweet this out, but I was in Toys R Us this past weekend. I'll make sure to tweet it out tonight or tomorrow as I send out, you know, Clicks of the Week stuff. but I took a picture of, I'm not going to put it on the screen now, but I took a picture of something cool, which is, it's a muscle chest shirt and mask. It's basically a kid's costume of the Black Panther. And I was, listen, it's not something I ever thought I would see ever. And now that it's here, it's pretty awesome. I'm so impressed that they're, that, you know, the characters made it this far, and it's exciting. It's exciting to me.
Cool. 2016 Harvey Award nominations are open. Aspen Comics has given Undiscovered Talent a shot by drawing some covers. Some Civil War tie-in books are being teased over at comicbook.com with an interview with Marvel Senior Vice President of Sales and Marketing, David Gabriel. Marvel's Sanaa Aminat introduces Barack Obama at a White House event.
That was pretty cool. Those were some great pictures.
Yeah.
Those were some great pictures. It was Women's History Month. I actually have an old high school classmate who was present in the room also. And I saw that, you know, she was posting pictures being in the White House for that event. And seeing these pictures of Sanaa Aminat, who I've met before, she's really cool. I met her at New York Comic Con. And, you know, she signed my copy of Ms. Marvel number one. And to see her, you know, interacting with the president. And I really hope that President Obama, you know, I know he's busy and whatnot, but at one point finds the time to read that trade, that first trade of Ms. Marvel. And hopefully, you know, puts it into Sasha Malia's hands, because that's, it's a great read. You know, I saw her specifically showing him that trade in the picture that Valerie Jarrett posted online. So. That was very cool to see.
I'd love to meet her.
Sanaa Aminat?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. She's very cool. By the way, somewhat related to politics, I wanted to add real quick. It's not really comic news, but Merrick Garland, the Supreme Court nominee that President Obama nominated this just the other day, apparently at one point had a comic book collection that was worth a bit of money, and during the Rose Garden ceremony, naming him as the president's nominee, President Obama mentioned that as part of working his way through Harvard Law, Justice Garland sold his comic book collection. It's one of those painful things that every young man has to deal with. I got a kick out of that, and the president even mentioned that he's familiar with that. He basically said, been there, done that, you know, felt that particular pain of having to sell his comic book collection as a young man. So I thought that was pretty cool. It was nice to see that, it sucks that at some point, sometimes we have to, let go of these things that give us so much joy, just so that we can, move on, in some of our other endeavors, because we have to, take what was an investment and cash it in.
Fans launch a petition to revive DC's Young Justice as a comic book. So
I know you're a fan of that.
Besides Renew Young Justice hashtag for renewing a season 3 on Netflix, they're trying to get it back in comic book form, which I'm, of course, all for. And finally, DC Comics, especially not finally, but DC Comics signed Steve Orlando, Evan Doc Shanner, and Jesus Moreno to exclusive contracts.
Nice.
So congrats to all three gentlemen. And I think we forgot to mention this in the movie news, but there was a new X-Men Apocalypse trailer today.
Yes.
It was all right.
Yes, I haven't watched it, though. I haven't watched it.
I'm just kind of like,
did you see the new trailer for Daredevil?
Oh, the little five-second thing?
No, the one before that.
But it was like a little teaser today, but I think sometime last week, or maybe it was earlier this week, that Daredevil trailer. Yeah, that was kind of nice.
Yeah, I'm sorry to interrupt. You can talk more about the X-Men trailer that I probably may not watch for a while.
There's not much. You see a little more. See a little more action. As someone pointed out online, they need to show Bryan Singer the comics and teach him that Mystique is supposed to be the villain and Storm the good guy, not the other way around.
God.
Got them flipped.
Oh my gosh. It's because of who's playing them. That's what it is. Jennifer Lawrence.
Lawrence is like, especially in this trailer, it's like almost like, especially the second, like from the middle to the end of the trailer, it's all Jennifer Lawrence, like her leading the X-Men into battle to take on Apocalypse and his horsemen.
Goodness gracious.
Yeah. And you see more Quicksilver too, because he was cool in the last one, so bring him back.
Gotcha.
This little hodgepodge of X-Men. I don't get too bent out of shape of the lineups for these movies, because it's like you can cherry pick whatever mutants you want to use. My issue comes in when they have mutants there just for the sake of having them like show up and use up their power for 5 seconds.
Yeah, just because it's a cool effect or something.
Yeah, you know? Cool effect.
So, all right. Do we have any other news to drop, or are we good to go?
I think we're good to go.
All righty. Just as a quick recap of our clicks of the week, PCN_Dirt, his click of the week was Web Warriors #5, and our joint click of the week between Agent_70 and at TimDogg98 was Spider-Woman #5. And Roddy Cat, feel free to let us know what your click of the week is. We definitely suspect that it's Power Man and Iron Fist #2.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
All right. So I want to thank everyone for tuning in tonight's episode. Follow us on our individual Twitter accounts. I'm at TimDogg98 and at CBCron. Roddy Cat is at Roddy Cat and at News Nerds Need. PCN Dirt is at PCN_Dirt. And go to his website, popculturenetwork.com. And Agent 70 is at Agent_70.
On Twitter and Instagram.
Yes. So with that, we'll be back next week to find out how C2E2 went for Doug. And
how Daredevil went, because we're not staying up all night to watch the whole thing. So it might take us a few days.
It'll probably take me 2 weeks, because I can guarantee I'll be lucky if I get through 5 episodes this weekend.
Yeah.
I got stuff going on.
Yeah, same. We're all busy, but like I said, it'll take us at least a little while to catch up, to make it through those 13 episodes.
I'll be muting hashtags. Oh, you know what?
What's up?
I guess y'all will be having a show next week.
Oh, what's going on?
Batman Superman next week.
Already? Oh, that's my next week. God, yo.
That is next week, right?
Crazy.
I've been known to try to make stuff earlier than it is. Yep, next week.
Oh my God, that is next week already?
So stay tuned to the CBCron, at CBCron Twitter feed to...
to find out when we actually do next week's show, if we postpone it to Friday or Saturday.
Are you trying to see it Thursday night?
I don't know. Listen, I don't know if I'm going to, but then we see what happened with Star Wars. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I don't know.
I need to buy my tickets online, because I bought a Groupon code that I need to use for discounted tickets.
There you go. I was just going to say, you know what it is for me is that I don't necessarily intend to watch this Thursday night, but if someone asks and the tickets come through, then, you know, who knows? So we got to keep it kind of fluid. I'm just basing this off of what happened when The Force Awakens came out, and I got midnight showing tickets. So
we'll
see how that goes. You know, I just have, you know, we just kind of have to play it safe and let the listeners know and the viewers know that, yeah, we may have to push the show a day or two to make up for the fact that two, three, or all of us are going to be watching Batman Superman next week on Thursday night.
Yep. So stay tuned.
You got it.
We are the Comic Book Chronicles, and we are signing off.
Peace.